Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Overstatements. Crookedness relating. The soul's churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word. Riveting. It tears my pilot. Streams that are promised to make seeking less. You're through to the Mad Poet. Few things to work, few things to talk about. I am the host of Poetry Journal podcast, and just a few words. You know, I always like to start off with some poetry, and then I have questions. So let me go at it as it goes. Time to shine with these words. I give thee flight to take off like the birds. Growing like the virgin as the blood gets to splurging. Life is for living, thus I need mine right now. Moments are for taking, thus I need to get mine. Like my name was ravenous and these lames have been starving us. A wise man once said, can I have some more, sir? Illest lines got me paraphrasing, sitting in amazement. Grasping at times like the present, like the loud mouth I've got to tell it. And so, I always like to just bring certain things, just bear with me. I just like to just bring a few quotes once in a while from things I like to write and stuff like that. So this was the quote of today's episode that I really wanted to go through. A few questions I wanted to speak on. One thing was, I'm sure everybody knows that, you know, O.J. Simpson, the legendary football player, passed away close to a week now. And my question to that is, let me unpack this. First things, let me just, for people that don't really know who O.J. was. And it's hard to say that, you know, a lot of people don't, but at the same time, I want to pay the respect as well. O.J. Orenthal James Simpson was an American football player and actor. He played in the National Football League for 11 seasons, primarily in Buffalo, for the Buffalo Bills. And regarding as one of the greatest running backs of all times, born on 9th of July 1947. So that was O.J. Simpson. So just wanted to just give a little background on that especially. But outside of that, does exercising a right to protest in this day and age, does it matter? Do you consider protest antiquated? Is it pretty much futile in this day and age? Yes, we can do it, but, you know, are the effects, does it change anything? Hip-hop. Is there any such thing as hip-hop purist anymore? You know, is that a thing of the past? Are wordsmiths a dying breed? in the realm of rap. Questions. So yes, wondering. I just wanted to put that out there. I have philosopher's poet. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. I'm still trying to get this video to work, but for some reason it ain't. But anyway, I'm still here.
Fair enough. Did you get the breakdown of what I was speaking about?
Yeah, I've been here since the beginning, certainly. I'm gonna try and fix this video thing, but it's good that I'm here. I heard everything you were talking about, OJ, hip hop purists, protesting. Yeah.
Let's start with OJ. Do you consider him a villain or a victim?
Wow. It's a lot to unpack with OJ. It's like most things in life, it's complicated.
Let's start with a question first. Like, which one would it be for you? And then you can speak on it, elaborate on that afterwards.
Well, I'll put it this way. You said, was he a victim or
a villain?
Most victims become villains. Let's put it that way. That's the start. So ultimately, that leads with
No. But you need to choose. You need to select which one first, and then you can go on.
I have to say that he was a villain, but that's very outcome based on what the media knows and obviously the history. There's a reason though I started that way, because I kind of want to give this some context. I can call him a villain because of the crime, whether you believe he did it or not. I would say we only know really what the media has portrayed about OJ Simpson, and obviously one of the big things, or I remember this even myself, one of the big things around the time was the movie they made about it as well, with do you remember that, with Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Yes.
Now obviously with the very limited information we have, and obviously you had the news briefings about the court case, the OJ Simpson case obviously got turned into a case of discrimination, and there obviously was discrimination during the case. But then what made it more complex was the media or the movie tried to portray him as a man, as a black man, who actually wasn't that all that connected to his community. And so the movie tried to portray it as if his lawyer made an attempt to make him more accessible and connect with the community, with the black community, in order to gain their favor and the jury's favor, because obviously there was the issue about the jury, according to the news articles.
Hold on. We have somebody. Let's hear what they have to say, and then we continue afterwards.
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Yep.
Did you hear any of the topics, the questions that we were asking?
No, I just joined.
Okay. So are you a hip hop fan?
What do you mean, like kinda?
Hip hop. So are you? Do you like words? Do you like wordplay, stuff like that?
Sorry.
Huh?
Couldn't tell you no questions though. I'll try.
Now, basically, one of the questions I was asking was, are there any fans of wordplay anymore? Like true, like, you know, hip hop purists out there. So one of the questions I was asking was that. So that's why I'm asking you.
Oh yeah, do you like them?
Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So, are you a fan of? Are you a purist? Would you consider yourself a purist?
Not really. No, please, 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 please.
Let's actually, you know what? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself in the context of the conversation? So we were.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, fucking hell. Oh, No. I forgot. Okay, what?
Tell us, start off. Just.
What do you understand from what we're talking about? Like, where did you want to speak on? What did you want to speak on?
I don't know, I just joined.
Oh, you just wanted a
no,
piece
please
of
don't remove me. No, actually, I beg.
All right, you're gonna have to amen. Just listen though, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, no worries. All right, back to what you were saying now.
Yeah, initially I said he was a villain, but if we don't really know all the facts and we've been given a view of the case, and obviously he got off the case, but that doesn't mean that he was guilty. How much can I really say whether he's a villain or a victim? You know, I've had to reconsider actually whilst we're thinking that, because actually I'm basing my opinion on a movie and media outlets. I know nothing about them.
I guess what I'm asking you, not necessarily what you know of the, you know, just what's on the movie. I'm asking from what you know, even if it's behind the scenes, just in general, the knowledge alone from what you've seen, including the optics.
Can you hear me?
You understand, like, what is your take on it? That's what I'm trying to learn.
Okay. You got a fresh cut.
Well, alright, so my take on it is, and the optics and everything surrounding it, is basically it's a black man who was accused of murdering his partner because she was apparently unfaithful on him to him, and he went through the process of trying to hide the body, run away from the cops, and then obviously he went on to win his case because they couldn't prove he committed the crime, but then obviously he was ostracized by mainstream media and the community after that because many people wouldn't believe that he was guilty. I think he is, in that sense, he's a victim of existing beliefs and assumptions that people make about a certain type of person. He's a certain type of black guy. He's got wealth, or he was wealthy at the time. And he couldn't have won either way in the public opinion. So that's why I say maybe he's a victim. I've reconsidered my view, because A, in front of a lot of white people at the time, and maybe even today, would have looked at him and said, well, you fit a lot of the physical, let's say, stereotypes someone who is black and rich and marries or has a white partner, and perhaps there's a bit of animosity there. But then on the other side of the black community, he's a wealthy black man who's an athlete, who's famous, who has a white partner, which we both know comes with a bit of controversy, even to a certain extent today, in terms of how he's looked at. And so I say villain because actually, whether in part of him just being him, outside of people who watch American football, he's always going to have the side eye. On either side, who is, people would argue, who is the real O.J. Simpson? In that sense, he was a victim. Whether they would have actually given him a fair trial or just made assumptions about him, whether he did it or not,
Yeah, man. I hear you. Okay, let's go on to something else. Obviously, from you, knowing you, and what I know of you, would I be correct in classing you as a hip hop purist?
I think. Yeah. Actually, before we your answer. I actually wanted to know your thoughts on the first thing, if you could just briefly interject. I really want to know what your opinion is.
Personally, just hearing a story at first, I initially thought he was a villain. But at this point, I'm of the opinion that I'm veering into him being a victim at this point. And just what I'm hearing from just from the start, hearing more information outside of what the media has pumped into it. That's what part of the reason. Just, you know, some of the background and hearing about some of the evidence that's come out, and just from what his partner was going through, and the whole interaction with drug situation, and not having, you know, there was a story that, you know, initially, you know, there was a situation with her and drugs, and allegedly there was a situation with her and drugs, and he bailed her out initially the first time, but the second time the whole situation happened and he refused to actually pay the drug dealers, etc., and things kind of went left from there. And so yeah, there's basically, there's a lot of situations, there's a lot of things that wasn't, you know, put to light. Why I came to that conclusion.
Interesting, because actually it's not the first time in the media where someone, obviously, as I said, because of the optics, you know, a murder or an assault or seemed to be a sort of a white woman by a larger black guy. And what you said actually reminds me of, did you ever, I'm not going to dwell on this too long, because I know you want to move on, but did you ever see that? Did you ever hear about, you know, the story about the Central Park Five? That reminds me of that, in the sense of people made assumptions, might have made assumptions first, you know, shot first and then asked questions later.
Yeah. It's funny because I believe, if I recall correctly, there was a little, Donald Trump was actually a part of the whole condemning of the whole, you know, Central Park fact. Not to veer off too far, but yeah, yes, I'm aware of the story. And yeah, but it's really tragic though, man. You know, that that whole thing, that is,
yeah,
it's really tragic, truth be told, that whole story. So, you know, it's one of those. So now we've kind of established that part. Should we move on to something else?
Yeah.
Yeah, so as I was saying, hold up, let me hear what this, someone is trying to chime in.
You have any stuff yet?
No.
Yes, hello there.
Hello.
You alright?
Right, you doing? Good.
Yes, indeed. Did you hear what we were talking about? The question that I asked, that we were trying to discuss.
No, I didn't hear.
Yeah, bro.
Okay, are you a fan of hip hop?
I kinda.
Are you a hip hop fan? Are you a purist?
A what, sir?
Are you a hip hop purist?
No.
Okay, do you know OJ?
Yes.
Okay, so the question is, do you consider OJ a villain or a victim?
Victim.
You think he's a victim?
Okay.
Is there a reason?
No, not really, no.
You know about, so you're not too familiar with the case, you just know it. It's a general information. Fair enough. Alright, thank you.
Thanks. Okay.
So that was interesting.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite expecting that, but you know, you kind of, I guess you agree. He thought it was a victim also. But let's move on to what we were speaking about. So like you were saying, you're a purist, you're from purist.
Yeah, so I'm a hip-hop purist, but that doesn't mean that there's a strong presence of hip-hop purists these days. I think that whatever remains of the purist community in hip-hop is probably more underground. You know?
Really?
Well, when I say underground, this is relative to, like, mainstream. Like, I mean, when you say purist, you know, you're talking about the art form, you know, the skill, yeah. We can talk like independent rappers. We can go further and talk about the guys that used to go on like 106 and Park and do like freestyle battle rap, you know. Even if we go back to the UK, we want to talk about purists. So, you can talk about things like, I don't know if you remember back in the day, this thing called the Jump Off.
I think I do. Yeah.
They had a bit there where they had like a...
I'm aware of it, yeah. I'm aware of
that kind of thing. So, but in general, hip-hop isn't really about lyricism. It's not an art in the same vein it used to be. Some people might argue and say, oh, what about the beats and things like that? Well, even that, I would say, they lack the dimension and depth and range of creativity, both in a lyrical sense and in instrumentals and beats and, you know, creativity. I'm not sure, as I said, in terms of mainstream hip-hop, there is such thing as purists. Underground to me means, as I said, there are two tiers. There's those who are really like diehard battle rappers, and then there are those who listen to independent hip-hop artists or more independent hip-hop artists. A lot of the purists are still around, also listen to a lot more, their mainstay is more older hip-hop. So there's some 2010 stuff in it, but they go back like 90s, 2000s, they're 80s. So they're the people still, you know, you go onto their Spotify playlist and, you know, you've got like 90s hip-hop, you've got sometimes going back further to the 80s, you've got 2000s. There's not really a huge amount of the new stuff. There's some 2010 stuff in there, but, you know, a lot of the artists, I've never seen, for example, this isn't a human, I've never seen anyone, any of people in my circle listen to, say, like, have see like a Blueface or someone in their Spotify playlist. You know, they might have some Pusha T in there still, or or even the new J. Cole album. They might have like Benny the Butcher or like Isaiah Rashid. It's even some more like conscious stuff like Earth Gang or whatever.
So in essence, what you're saying is you think there's no such thing anymore, or it's very it's a dying breed, basically.
Yeah, dying breed might be a good way to say it, but I think a better way to say it that I'm going to cling to is it's dormant.
So it's not necessarily going to die out, but it's never going to be the most popular thing going.
Yeah, or it could be a revival, like all things. There seems to be a cycle of what's the in thing, you know. It's like kids in their 20s wearing t-shirts from Zara with Tupac on the back, not really knowing who the man is, but it's a strange thing. So there might be a revival, but it will be more, but the key thing will be why you listen to the music rather than the fact that you listen to it.
Okay, fair enough.
And you haven't said much. I'm dying to.
Hold up, just pause for a second. Ishmael and Flovey, if you want to chime in, just let me know. And if you want to chime in on the topics, we have a few questions, so we're just kind of going through things. But if you want to kind of speak on it, just let me know and I'll invite you into the chat.
Flovey's actually going to be on this event on Friday.
Yes, I'm aware. That's why I thought, it would be nice to have a conversation with her about some of the stuff that we're speaking about. You have to request to be invited as a guest. And so then we can speak to you directly. Yes, I remember meeting you at Hidden Literature. I think, yes, you were performing. We both performed that night. Same thing for you, Ishmael. If you want to hit me up, let me know if you want to have a... See if you want to tune in on... the main topic tonight is OJ, the legendary football player that passed away almost a week now. Do you consider him a legend? Sorry, do you consider him a villain or a victim? That's where we're going with it tonight. So, yeah. But you don't have to. You could just write it in the chat, and I'll be able to read it.
Yeah, don't be shy, people, as well, if you want to come in. I feel like a couple of people have something really worth saying there, and so...
Yes, they should know. Okay, here's another question for you. One of the other questions were... are you... First of all, are you a purist? Hip-hop purist? And are wordsmiths a dying breed in the realm of rap? The other thing that we're gonna cover is does exercising the right to protest matter anymore? Do you consider it antiquated, somewhat futile? You know, does it move the needle anymore? That was a bit more to unpack, so I kind of left that until last. But yeah, so sorry, going back to
I want to know your opinion, just
on rap. On you talking about the lyrics?
Yeah.
A somewhat similar view, I would say. Personally, I think it's a minority, and perhaps it most likely will remain that way, because to an extent rap is not necessarily controlled by the people, by the originators. To that extent, we don't necessarily own rap anymore. But at the same time, there are still purists that, you know, look for wordplay, wordsmith, to deliver, you know, like real pure purists, to kind of deliver pure bars and just really, you know, be prolific out there. But at the same time, those people are few and far in between. And I would also argue that most of these people are actually performers themselves. So perhaps that's where, you know, the whole mindset of being a purist is so relevant. But at the same time, you're part of a minority. At the same time, you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a tricky, there's so many moving pieces, but that's where I stand with it. So yeah, it is not necessarily a dying breed, but it's always going to, I think to an extent, it will remain a minority.
I think that...
Ishmael just said you think rap is finished.
Oh, you want to come up on it, Ishmael? Yeah.
I think you're just gonna write it. But yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, to an extent, you know, rap is just, it's not the same anymore, and so, you know, being a purist, it doesn't pay off anymore for the most part, because there's not many people, unless, and even, you know, when you talk about purists, I would argue the majority, again, even in that minority, is somewhat on the ground.
Mm.
Ishmael said, after 50 Cent and his generation, after 50 Cent, his generation were depressed.
I mean, I can't say that they were the best. I would say that definitely things...
The last of the Mohicans, perhaps, like the last of the authentic... And the reason why I say that is because it's not only you know, being a pure rapper, he was like the gangster rap to go with it, you know, being about the life, not just rapping about it. I think we can all agree that at this point, everybody that raps is pretty much
I can take that sort of ilk of that sort of generation. I can see that.
But you know, I've heard, you know, talks that Ja Rule was really, you know, a church guy for real. So I don't know.
Apparently, he was a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, that's it. So you know, that's where we go with this, you know.
But then a lot of rappers profess God. It's like a common thing. Like, you know, it's like, I remember hearing an interview, I think Lil Kim was doing a freestyle and then saying, give all the glory to God. I mean, I don't know how much glory to God was in that freestyle, but it's human nature.
I said I don't even listen to drill genre anymore. Even with the drill thing, I'm not necessarily a drill guy, but there are certain people that stand out for me, and just, I think maybe just because of how unique they are in terms of their delivery, I think it's quite prolific, and they probably most likely will stand the test of time, I would argue. Sorry about that, what were you saying?
Oh no, I was just saying this. I guess that's just human nature. The idea of swearing one thing and then basically praying, you know, two sides of your mouth. That's just, rappers exemplified the idea of a double life. They exemplified the idea of being human. You know, the idea of, when we all do it, talk from two sides of our mouths. We're not, where there were a paradox, you know, interesting.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. You know, because sometimes it's just that, you know, rap is an art form, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, and for the most part, I think we are more artist than we are, you know, a drug dealer, which is like a minority in itself, or like a street guy or stuff like that. I think for the most part, most rappers are academics. You know, they went and they got a degree.
I remember hearing, that wouldn't surprise me, to be perfectly honest. I mean, with a lot of the lyricists as well, the lyrical rappers, it does take some acumen to, you know, vocabulary to do that, you know, and a lot of intelligence.
So. Absolutely.
But I won't talk more on the paradox thing, but it just brought back a memory when I was like 16 and getting through a DMX album to get to the M where he does the prayer. After all that was pretty intense, 12 tracks, and then at the end, Heavenly Father, like kind of.
DMX was known for that, man. He was just so amped up.
Yeah.
So amped up when he was ready to really. But you know, you ever seen, you know, they talk about, you know, bikers and the idea that they go into this, that once you hit a certain speed, it's like you go into this tunnel vision, And it's like, I like to think of it like entering the Matrix. And I think DMX is one of those guys that really personifies that, where he just literally, once you flip that switch and he's performing, he just goes into the Matrix, man. And it's like, man, he probably believes he could walk on water, bruv. Like, it's that deep, where it's just like, he believes anything that his mind tells him. And you can hear it. You can hear it. You can hear the conviction behind his words. And I think as a performer, man, that's amazing.
Yeah. He definitely was a performer. You could definitely feel, imprint his feelings, his emotions, his energy into what he said. He definitely didn't lack any conviction whatsoever about what he wanted to talk about. And that is a rare trait, to be perfectly honest.
Absolutely. So to answer you the question, are wordsmiths a dying breed in the realm of rap?
In summary, yes. I use the word dormant, like I said, because these things come in cycles, and it's more about, you know, will it come back at some point? Maybe. And why will it come back? Well, I can't answer that. People might hunger for something more. But I would say at the moment, yeah, it is I use the word dawn. You could say dying breed. Yeah, it's not, you know. Yeah, for real. Yeah, I agree.
And to conclude this part as well, are hip hop purists a thing of the past?
Yes, I think hip hop purists are a thing of the past, or where at this stage have us looking a bit like dinosaurs or something.
Okay, and to the final thing I really want to pick on back. Firstly, let's start with the first piece. Does exercising the right to protest matter in the community?
I think it still matters. I look at examples of previous protests. Now, you might argue that nothing was done substantial, but it forced people to listen. I think the reason why we believe protest isn't relevant anymore is because of A, social media. You could argue, is that a more powerful tool for... But B, there's something that a protest does that social media can't, even though you can reach people globally with social media. I think from my experience, people usually show up for a protest, usually show up, they want to prove a point. And it's one thing to say something on Instagram, it's another thing to be outside, let's say the Houses of Parliament or whatever, or Westminster Abbey with plaques and loads of people. I think we've been made to feel that protests are dead by government and media and those agenda, you know. It's been given the perception that it's less effective, or even the perception that what's the point, so you might as well not. And I think that's deliberate.
Yeah.
And I believe to anyone who really has a belief about something and goes to protest about it, I think there's already an idea that some people are just there because they love a bit of mayhem. You know, you get people go to these anti-capitalist protests just because they want to fight or do something nuts. But then you get people who really do care. And for them, every single body that's there for the right reasons makes a difference. And they themselves, in their own conscience, feel like they're making a difference from being there. They feel like they're making a sacrifice. And I don't feel you get the same level of sacrifice if you're not, if your presence isn't there physically. But the same feeling of satisfaction, even if it's a big placebo or there's a psychological benefit, there's nothing like physical presence to show that there's some weight behind fighting for something that you believe in or don't believe in.
That's interesting. So in essence, you're saying perhaps it's not as
it's not to the extreme where it's antiquated and an effort in futility.
No, I don't think it's antiquated. I think it's a perception of media as that it's become antiquated, or that its effectiveness isn't what it used to be. You could actually play devil's advocate here, and if you ask me, I'm going to ask you first. Why would someone believe it's antiquated?
Just thinking about the level of effectiveness that has in this day and age, and just considering how over the years, especially since the lockdown, how hard pressed, approaches has been exercised, and the feedback in terms of like results, from actually having a protest, demonstration, etc. Like, what has it actually accomplished? I'm looking at more of like, is the proof there to show that, this is quite effective. This is something that has made a difference over the years. So that's what I'm pretty much looking at, and I'm wondering, is that, because when you think about how much has happened over the years, in the process of protesting and what has taken place, and just the amount of damage and people getting shot, people getting run over, all kind of stuff like that. And to even go further into it, like comparison from back in say the 60s compared to now, what is the difference? And I'm just trying to perhaps weigh up, the level of effectiveness, the dichotomy in a sense, compared to then and now.
I'm just trying
to summarize, where are we in terms of like how effective is the protest?
I mean, you mentioned the 60s, and you got me thinking obviously about civil rights in the States. Do you think that obviously the stakes, you could assume, were far higher back then in terms of racism? Do you think that also drove people to make the commitment to protest? Because this was, you could argue, it was more about survival than now, in terms of some of the privileges and perceived freedoms we have today of the protest. I remember between lockdowns there were protests about BLM, for example, and there was a massive turnout, and you had a couple of famous people. I remember AJ turned up in his wheelchair because he had an injury on his foot or something. And then I wondered about how effective that was. I think it raises issues around structural issues around how successful it can be if you don't have organizations in place, the right organizations to support what you do with all that manpower and the protest and the momentum. And I just don't think recent protests you can look at BLM and say it really didn't have the critical mass or the right organizations with the right intentions behind it. I'm not sure. It's definitely not in the same vein. But then I look at things like in France, I think the most recent protest they had was like teacher strikes, state workers, which was far more effective. But then a protest in this country is nothing compared to a protest in other parts of Europe, like France. It's just not, like, in terms of the measures they'll go to. So I think it's a mix of behavioural attitudes of a population versus privilege. Coupled with privilege and coupled with the structural strengths and weaknesses of those people behind the protest and backing organisations, whether they actually have a conviction about the actual cause. So I agree with you in one sense that that was far more effective, but there are circumstances back in the civil rights era that we just don't have, or conditions that we simply don't have here. And I think the necessity during the 60s was that everyone had to kind of sing from the same hymn sheet. Whereas I believe that something like BLM, even though obviously there was a death of a black person, BLM movement itself and some of the founders also have views that conflict with larger portions of the same community. You know, if you read their manifesto, they had loads of things that conflict with a lot of black Americans and maybe black people in the UK, that they would consider even too left-wing for some communities in, you know. Yeah. So there's just... So there's a lot more nuance to it, so, and by and large, I still think most of our community, especially the older generation, are still quite conservative. So a lot of and a lot of the things within that manifesto, outside of just obviously fighting for equality, they would have seen them as counterproductive to the progress of the community as well. So it's sort of like a double-edged sword in one sense. Not to mention a lot of the mistrust and uncertainty around how the funding was used, that was gathered by, you know.
And you know, that's part of the reason why, you know, I was thinking about this question. And, you know, essentially, as we know, protest is supposed to be the voice, you know, it's the only way when the voice of the unheard. And so, like you said, it's a point, to the point of survival when you speak about times of like, say, 16, where it's very extreme, where, you know, there is no other way. And, you know, potentially it could be civil war if things don't really change, or, and so, you know, everybody's trying to find a way or trying to figure something out so we can have a better situation, you could say.
Yeah.
Whereas coming up to the here and now, like say, even in the lockdown, yes, it was quite extreme for the time that we're living in. But I would argue it wouldn't necessarily be as extreme as, you know, like say when, you know, back in the 60s. And not only on top of that, the fact that we actually never really knew any better. I think to the extent of like the 60s, the time difference, the time period, we've experienced so much good, terrible things as well, but somewhat certain things that is almost refreshed the palate in a sense, compared to experience and opportunity that people had years coming into the 2010, the 2016, etc., etc. And we've seen so many amazing things and opportunities created for so many different people, different backgrounds, different ethnicities. And so I think somewhat the venom also of their experience or what they're going through, perhaps not as extreme as people compared back then. And so to put the bow on top, it is somewhat extreme the way I asked it, but I did it on purpose because I really wanted to hear you know, how you kind of contain it. You know, I think it's valid to kind of question or evaluate the effectiveness at this point that we're at.
Well, you know? Obviously we've got, there's been the sort of Palestine-Israel conflict. Even that, people have been protesting for months in central London. The protests themselves weren't actually the thing, the catalyst that effectively conversations around a ceasefire, unfortunately.
Hold on one second. Ishmael said maybe that's what's needed for things to change. A big example is the Haitians got to fight, not beg for for opportunities, I guess, alluding to.
Is he talking about when he says? Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're aware with. I'm not sure if Ishmael's talking about, you know, here and now, how it appears in Haiti right now. Ishmael, let me know if you're talking about the here and now. Are you just talking about, you know, just the revolution that took place in?
It sounds like you're talking about the revolution with Toussaint.
He's talking about back. Oh, with France. Okay.
Yeah. And
that's still relevant as well. You know, as they say, man, like nothing really changes unless we go to war. Like that's pretty much. You know, at the extreme, it always effective to go extreme. You know, somebody, it's kind of like, for example, you know, somebody come with a knife, you show up with a shotgun. Like it just makes the exclamation mark has never lost its potency over the years.
In one sense, you're right. That obviously it's the quickest way to put to rest something, but then on the other hand, it's sort of the easiest way to do it. But obviously, you've got to wonder that the more, you know, there's a price to pay for everything, and so obviously violence begets violence. So you could get what you want in the end, but the price would be high. It's sort of like what we call a Pyrrhic victory, where you know. But secondly, I think the danger of using violence to, or enforcing something to initiate a change, is people follow the change because they have to, but they don't really believe in it. And that's a problem, because you haven't actually changed people's minds or attitudes. All you've done is enforce them. The moment they've got the right to repeal that, they'll go back to the way they are. For me, this is like Brexit, where there's this sort of veneer of unity in the UK. But the reality is, once the people voted the majority, the narrow majority, to actually remove themselves from the EU, that's when you saw a lot of people show their true colours about their neighbours. So they didn't really believe in it, they tolerated it. So all that happens with something that's enforced, whether it's by gun or by policy, is that you don't really... There's no agent for change of society. It's just an instruction, but people don't actually learn or develop any sort of behavioural reflection, review, any, you know, they don't, all of those things that help sustain society, they don't develop them. They just go along to get along. So from a philosophical standpoint, it's short term.
Yeah, and Ishmael said, and they ended it with, I think it's
about
the Brexit.
But I'll quickly jump back on the Palestinian thing. That I think that largely got to where it was, not because of protests, that it got to where it was because there was too many bodies being piled up, too much that's being done that looked real ugly, and you had America obviously supporting or trying to of keep things on the hush or kind of silently support Israel's actions. And then obviously to make this even worse, there you have Iran. So it's almost like a timely distraction, unfortunately, in a weird way, for Israel. But protests alone, people were I don't think they would have listened to protesters simply because there was too much political interest. Yeah, it was only when the body is piled too high, and then they had to realize that they couldn't look like they were completely devoid of ethics.
Yes. I was about to go into that. Infringement of human rights, all that malarkey. But no, you make some valid points. But on the other side of the scale, I would say it's pretty much what you allude to what we're speaking about, the conversation to do with rap and, you know, lyricists and lyricist fans, I think to an extent, you know, that's always going to be, you know, to blow this up beyond that, you know, protest has always been something that's come throughout the ages where people have to kind of fight for their rights. You know, when you're in a situation where you're trying to, if only just avoid blood spill, you know, people try to turn to conversation or protest or functional distraction, you know, where like you're making people uncomfortable, but in a way where you're still avoiding that extreme, because we know, you know, people die when things get extreme in human society. So I think to an extent it's always going to be something relevant, but at the same time I think there's questions to how effective it is over the years as you kind of go back and forth over the years to how people pretty much react to it and how it's exercised.
But let's not forget that hip hop itself in the early days was a form of protest.
Correct, yes.
And people might have felt uncomfortable about the content of some of those songs, but they expressed it in the best way they could in terms of what was going on.
Agreed, but as we know, back in those days, as you know, the culture was totally different. It stood for something, whereas now, hip-hop is almost like marketing on steroids. You know, one could argue it's just not the same. And the ownership has changed down the years, where, you know, the founders don't necessarily have a grasp or grip on hip-hop to that extent anymore, where they can control, you know, and voice their disapproval on this society as we know it. So it's a tricky one.
I don't want to take everything away from, let's say, modern hip hop. I would say it's allowed for a greater emotional range. I'll just give it that and that, and that's all I'll give it. But then even then, some could argue that they may consider a lot of it as rather egocentric in a different way that the hip hop we grew up to was, you know, you could say that in the context of someone talking about police violence and someone talking about drunk calling their ex at night, you know.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, the way I see it, at the end of the day, by it's as much as it's talking about real things, you know, it's still art. Art imitates life. So I think to an extent, most artists, somewhat, you are gonna speak about what most of what you're gonna speak about is, it is gonna be relative to your experience, to your life. So sometimes it might not be to the, it can't always be to the extreme. Do you get what I mean? But sometimes it is gonna be, you know, oh man, Brenda didn't pick the phone up last night. You know, I was trying to call her and she didn't. You know what I mean? All that madness. But it's just what it is. And so you kind of have to just be careful the way you interpret it.
I mean, I'm grateful for that as well, because it's something, you know, it's an everyday thing. It's a real thing. So I'm not going to look at too much. I'm grateful for that, because that's expansion in yourself. It's just that that also comes with other drawbacks in terms of, as a whole, as a collective.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I won't devalue that at all, because they're real experiences.
Yes, indeed. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there for the night.
Okay.
But thanks for everyone for coming and tuning in and just kind of chiming into the conversation. That he said, so they found a way to point the culture by new age rap and car.
<Kanye. laughs>
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. I think, you know, we were at the age where we know what Cardi stands for. And you know, that's not really what that's not really what we're about. That's not what hip-hop's supposed to be about. I hear what you're saying, Ishmael. That's real talk, man. That's real talk. But you have any last words to say before I cut the cord?
I don't have any last words to say, actually. I've actually enjoyed the talk as usual. We keep going, and yeah, I would say let's keep going, but you know, work, yeah.
Yeah. But you know what it is? It's I was gonna say, Ishmael was saying, yeah, likewise, I suppose, as in he enjoyed the conversation. He says, I wish to go live too. Yeah, I'll speak to you about that.
Yeah, it'd be good to have your input in, Ishmael, as well, yeah.
Definitely. I think I was trying to invite him in also, but I wasn't really getting the option. Like I wanted to invite you. But it should be possible because. You remember the other person that came on live?
Yeah.
The very first, while we were talking. I'm sure they don't have enough followers, but they were able. I think, Ishmael, you have to kind of click on guests to be able to kind of come into the live. So if you look on your screen and it should say plus guest. And that should be a way for you to kind of be invited. But if not this time, like I said, I'll speak to you about that, and we'll see if we can kind of have a bit more discussion the next time.
Yeah, I might do some more research on that for this, like in terms of not research at all, but you know, like up, I guess up so that we can, you know, get more people on, maybe get the video working, because I think the sound works good,
for me. If not the video, at least we have sound, you know, so we have something we can kind of share with people what we've been talking about. But I agree, it has been great to kind of converse about some of the stuff, because I think it's relevant, very relevant to where we are in society, and not only that, but our age people, and people actually, you know, talking about real stuff, about serious issues, and things that, you know, are like important to the culture. So let's keep this going. We'll definitely be back. If not tomorrow, then I'll definitely be on, and you definitely be on as well. On Thursday, I think Thursday would be another good.
Yeah, Thursday is. Yeah. Thursday.
Okay. So if not tomorrow, then. I'll speak to you behind the scenes, but if not tomorrow, then definitely Thursday, and we'll just keep this going.
Alright, cool, yeah, sure.
Good to hear from you, Ishmael. Good to hear from you. And as always, man, Mr. Philosopher's Poet, podcaster himself, and always appreciate my brother chiming in. And we'll speak soon, man.
Yeah.
Not on Thursday. Have a good one.
Same here.
Right.
Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Over. with statements. Crookedness related. The souls churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word, riveting. It tears my pilot. Streams that are promised to make seeking less.